Blog Talk Radio.
So you want your charity to succeed. It's no secret that combining online and offline techniques is the key to modern-day fundraising success, and practical advice is what you need. The Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart is the perfect place to learn from experts around the world who, along with our host, provide advice you can use. Ted Hart is without a doubt one of the foremost nonprofit thought leaders. Also a successful author, his books cover a broad range of topics from major gift fundraising to use of social media and how to succeed online. Ted lectures around the world, but now he's here for you. From the latest in charity news, technology, fundraising, and social networking, Ted and his guests help you maneuver through this economic downturn in the charitable sector to greater levels of efficiency and fundraising success. Remember, this is a live call-in show. Become part of the show by adding your voice. Call now at 347-324-3080. After the show, you can find all our podcasts at tedhart.com. Just click on radio links. Don't forget to dial 347-324-3080. Now, welcome the host of the Nonprofit Coach, Ted Hart.
And welcome here live to this latest edition of the Nonprofit Coach. This is Tuesday, October 16th, and I'm coming to you live from the national headquarters of the Charities Aid Foundation of America. For those of you who are familiar with the show, you know, as the announcer just shared with you, that you can call in and ask questions of our Page 2 expert. We've got an excellent show for you today. You can also join us over in the chat room. I see folks over in the chat room right now. You can ask questions there, or you can email me at tedhart@tedhart.com. As always here on the Nonprofit Coach, we always start with Page 1 news. You can follow along with the radio links by going to tedhart.com and click on radio links. First up here on the Nonprofit Coach today comes to us from Marketing Sherpa. Excellent five steps to improve your email newsletter coming to us from Marketing Sherpa, starting with creating a care mentality for those who have given you their email address, personalizing the content. They're giving you specific examples of what they mean for each of the steps in the five steps for success. Use newsletters to nurture brand advocates. So you want to make sure that, as we've talked about on this show, those who are your Aunt Mabels, who are your mass influencers, need to be a top priority for your social media and your email outbound. Design for mobile. Let's face it, right now, Nielsen statistics show that 49.7% of U.S. mobile subscribers own smartphones, and that is growing daily. Make sure that you are preparing your content for the new mobile world. Step number five is to test to learn about your customers. Make sure that as you're putting your content together, you're not making decisions for those who support your organization, but instead you are learning from them what they're looking for. Here on the Nonprofit Coach, we always want to bring you the latest of important information, but also some fun information about the use of the Internet. Over on Mashable Social Media, I don't know if you caught this. I don't know what rock you were living under if you did not catch the fact that there was a space jump that just took place. And this was Felix Baumgartner's Red Bull Stratosphere space jump to set a world record. He not only set a world record, but also set an Internet record. More than 7.1 million people tuned in to watch the live video of the jump on YouTube. This was not only a record, but it was a record by a factor of 10. The prior live viewing record on YouTube had been set by the London Summer Olympic Games, when just 500,000 people concurrently tuned in for live video. So this space jump was an enormous success on the Internet, and thankfully it was successful, and he came back to Earth live. More than 7.1 million people tuned in for that live jump. Next up here on the Nonprofit Coach, it's always a pleasure to welcome friends back here to the Nonprofit Coach. It's my pleasure to welcome Mark Sutton from Artez Interactive, longtime friend here on the Nonprofit Coach. guest, a page two guest several times here on the show, always popular. But Mark, welcome back here to the Nonprofit Coach. You've got a big event going on in Toronto, and we wanted to make sure that you had an opportunity to tell all of our listeners about it.
Hey, Ted, thanks so much for having me. It's good to be back on with you. And, yeah, you're exactly right. Artez Interactive does an annual conference. It's based in Toronto, and this is indeed the week. So Artez Interaction is the name of the conference, and it's happening on Thursday in Toronto. And it's exciting because it gets bigger and I think more exciting each and every year. And I think that this year we've got a lot of terrific speakers representing not only practitioners and nonprofits who are doing pretty exciting things in the world of fundraising, and you know, we're seeing much more use of digital, mobile, social, but also a lot of more for-profit organizations that are helping. Some of the speakers are from Google, from Facebook, from the Huffington Post. We also have nonprofits that are doing some pretty incredible things, and they're going to be sharing case studies and best practices, SickKids and the Leukemia Foundation of Australia.
Ahead and give us a preview of our Page 2 expert today. Dave Sims will be here joining us in just a few moments on Page 2. He is not only a global expert in online fundraising and special event management, but he is right there at the Artez Interactive conference. So just tell us, why did you choose Dave Sims to be one of your key speakers?
Absolutely. So Dave Sims from Leukemia Foundation of Australia is here. He's going to be speaking at the conference. And Dave is a practitioner who has really he's also a pioneer in the realm of peer-to-peer fundraising and event-based fundraising, and has been jumped in with the online component of things a number of years back, and has been doing some very interesting things with growing that event via the use of various online mobile social components, and has a pretty methodical approach to how he approaches things and how he has grown what is already a very large and successful event, and continues to generate growth from a large event, and I think has some refreshing insights and some interesting approaches for anybody out there that is looking to do the same.
Well, we're thrilled to have Dave as our Page 2 expert, and those insights for all of our listeners are going to be very powerful today on Page 2. In my mind, there's really two big events that nonprofits who are interested in success online have to attend in Toronto in the fall. It's the Artez Interactive Conference, and in the spring, it's the Digital Leap Conference, which we're very appreciative that you're always involved with in a big way. Those kind of become bookend opportunities for people to really put together their strategy, test their strategy, and stay on top of what's working. Would you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I think so. We're big supporters, as you said, of Digital Leap, and it's one of those spaces where there's so much happening so quickly, and it's always good to take a little time away to see what others are doing, to think about what you might be doing, and also to learn what's going on, because a lot happens in 6 months. So yeah, I would absolutely agree with that.
Terrific. Well, Mark Sutton, CEO of Artez Interactive, good luck with your conference. It's been quite a big success for a number of years. No doubt you've got a terrific lineup for everyone who is smart enough to be able to attend Artez. For folks who might be interested in signing up, is there still room, and how would they be able to connect with Artez Interactive this year?
Yeah, there is. It's going to be quite a full event, but there are a few seats left. You can find out more about the event and register if you'd like to attend on Thursday by going to artez.com, and it's artez.com, and from there you can follow the link to see the agenda and go through the registration process.
Terrific. Mark Sutton, thank you for joining us again here on the Nonprofit Coach, and good luck up there in Toronto.
Thanks, Ed.
Here on Page 1 News, you'll find this by following along in the radio links today at tedhart.com. We want to just remind you of the importance of TechSoup. TechSoup is a terrific website. You can go to TechSoup.org, which you will find over in the radio links today. And we just want to remind all nonprofit organizations that they should register with TechSoup. This is an excellent opportunity for you to be able to receive donated software, update all the software that your organization needs for literally pennies on the dollar. You want to make sure that you are registered and qualified, and then they'll walk you through the process. Each of the companies that donate their software, and we're talking about everyone from Microsoft to Adobe to QuickBooks that Intuit over on TechSoup. So, but each one has their different rules and what they're looking for, who they'll support. So you want to make sure you stay on top of that. Those do often change. So you want to make sure that you go to tedhart.com, click on radio links, and you will find how to use TechSoup. Next up here on the Nonprofit Coach, I have to say it, you know, it takes a lot to be among the very best. And here on the Nonprofit Coach, we bring you the very best in the nonprofit world on a variety of different topics. But rarely has someone moved to the top of the class as quickly as Ken Berger over at Charity Navigator. Ken Berger is with us today. He's president and CEO of Charity Navigator. Ken, we, for a number of a couple of years, had a small group of people that were at the top in the top 10 of all-time favorite shows, episodes of the Nonprofit Coach. And then you and I got together on the show on April 17th of this year to talk about the 10th anniversary of Charity Navigator, to not only celebrate that, but to talk about Charity Navigator 2.0. And that episode, almost overnight, went to the top of the class. You are now the number one most popular show in the history of the Nonprofit Coach, your podcast and episode. Welcome back here to the Nonprofit Coach. And I'm just going to start off, Ken, and just ask you, why is your topic so popular and so important to our nonprofit listeners?
Well, I think it's very heartening to hear that, and I'm humbled by it. And I think it reflects the fact, though, that Charity Navigator is now probably the largest rater of charities in the world, and we influence billions of dollars in charitable gifts each year. And so I think that charities are increasingly interested to know what are the standards, what are where we're headed, because that four-star seal that we provide free to charities that achieve that four-star rating can see substantial increases in the funds they receive from donors.
It really is an important service that you provide, and increasingly it is controversial in the nonprofit sector, but increasingly important to donors. How do you balance the criticism to the strength of what you're trying to build? And I know that you've tried to deal with some of that criticism by moving your platform towards what I think you refer to in the podcast of April 17th, CN 2.0.
Yeah, I mean, I think the nature of our mission, which is to serve donors and to provide an evaluation of charities where we make a judgment, and as a result you have, you know, those that go from good to bad, by its nature, we are always, I think, going to have some who appreciate the work and some who are not so happy about the work. It really is, to some degree, the nature of who we are as a watchdog and a reviewer. But at the same time, we really are trying our best to listen and to hear when there is constructive criticism and feedback. And so we now have an advisory panel of almost 30 members that include some nonprofit leaders and experts and people from academia. And then in addition to that, we have a number of charities that we dialogue with as we go forward and continue to make changes to the rating system. You know, one of the things that we saw when we implemented CN 2.0 last year, now a year later, 40% of the charities have made changes to standards that are now being required through Charity Navigator. So it really is leveraging some change, and we think positive change, because a lot of our standards are based on the work of the independent sector and many others. So we stand on the shoulders of a lot of collective work that has been done in the sector over the years on what are the qualities of a high-performing nonprofit.
What feedback did you get from that show? I mean, the numbers just skyrocketed, so I can't imagine that there weren't people that were connecting with you after after that episode. Did people feel that they learned something new about Charity Navigator, or was it just a convenient way to get caught up?
People continue to be surprised by the fact that we are changing. We're now working on CN 3.0, and they're still back at CN 1.0. So people continue to be surprised that we're not just looking at finances, and even that within our look at finances, we're considering changes to how we look at overhead and other matters. So that's one of the responses we got. And in addition to that, charities interested in being on our website because they know, again, that it can lead to substantial increases in donors giving to their charities if they do well in our rating system.
Yeah. No, and what is that connection? Have you been able to draw a direct connection, or do you just feel that the feedback from donors say that that this is an important way for them to learn about charities?
Well, you know, one of the some research that was done on donors that I recommend to people by Hope Consulting called Money for Good, it's the first survey of its kind in about 15 years, shows that when donors are asked what matters most to them, they indicate as the highest ranking the effectiveness of charities, their effectiveness. It's more important than overhead or any of the other things that we often think of. And the challenge for a lot of donors is that for most charities, there's very little publicly reported information on results, particularly outcomes. And so we think that so as we talk to donors and tell them that we're moving in this direction of beginning to measure the quality of how a charity reports on its results, we are getting more donations, more support from our users than ever. So at least anecdotally, in that way, we're getting a lot of high fives and encouragement to keep moving down this road.
Right. Now, but you also only review a small segment of the overall nonprofit population in the United States. What about those charities that cannot benefit from having such a rating?
Well, three points on that. The first is that the roughly 6,000 charities that we review today garner roughly 50% of all private contributions made in the United States each year. The second is that we've set a goal within the next few years to go to 10,000. When we get there, it's going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of almost three-quarters of where all private contributions go. But the third thing that we're planning to do that I think more directly answers your question is that we've set a goal within the next year to place every single U.S.-registered nonprofit in America on our website, even if we don't rate them, and begin to provide tips, tools, links to write your own review, news, and a whole host of other things, as well as voting on what is the next charity we will rate, so that it will become a place where every single charity will at least have a footprint and you know, moving even further in that direction. And then we have a longer-term goal that someday we want to create a core of volunteers, a wiki-style kind of process where volunteers can help us to rate far more charities so that we can really ramp up to an even larger degree than we are today.
Well, as I mentioned before, congratulations on being the number one rated show here on the Nonprofit Coach and moving there so quickly from the show that just took place earlier this year is really quite a feather, not only in your cap, but I think an indication of how much interest there is in the topic of Charity Navigator and the work that you folks do. For listeners today, if they wanted to be in contact with you, if they wanted to reach out to you, we did provide a link to Charity Navigator over in the radio links today at tedhart.com. Any other information than just directing people to your website?
Well, I do want to say that my aspiration is that your radio show as well as our website will someday at least get as many views as the Space Jump, and we're getting close.
Wow, would be really quite – isn't that amazing? 7.1 million when the record was 500,000. So proof that you're in good company, that you came from the back of the pack to number one.
Thanks a lot, Ted.
Congratulations on being number one, and thank you for coming back here on the Nonprofit Coach. Give us an opportunity to touch base with you again. That is Ken Berger, President and CEO over at Charity Navigator. It is now time for us to move over to page two. My pleasure to welcome here to page two, our page two expert here on the Nonprofit Coach. Dave Sims is the General Manager of Events and Community Relations at the Leukemia Foundation in Australia. Dave emigrated to Australia in 1995 after a career with the BBC and commercial radio in the United Kingdom. He's worked for several charities, children's charities, and for the last 9 years, he's been the National General Manager for the Leukemia Foundation of Australia. Now, Dave has a $20 million target each year for fundraising events. So it's big business for the Leukemia Foundation. And this is the only national not-for-profit dedicated to helping Australians with blood cancers in Australia. Their mission is to care means that they provide free support for patients and their families during their long and tough treatment. They have a vision of curing these diseases, these blood cancers in Australia, and obviously their work benefits around the world. Dave Sims, welcome here to the Nonprofit Coach.
Thanks, Ted.
Now, Dave, we've got a lot that we want to talk to you about today. I'm going to start off just picking up on where Mark Sutton left off earlier when he sort of introduced you. You're a big deal in the online special events space. Start off by telling us why you think you're at Artes Interactive.
I think one of the things that we did was we made a few bold decisions with our big event, which is called the World's Greatest Shave, where people get sponsored to shave their hair to raise funds for us. And we could tell from this event that it had got potential. It had started at the community level with people wanting to shave their head in support of a friend who'd got a cancer. And we just knew that it had got legs. So we made some quite bold decisions, and I think that's been the secret of our success. And I suppose one of the things I'm going to talk about at the conference is about being bold and making some decisions and putting your money where your mouth is, but also doing it with a certain amount of caution. Like, you haven't got to do everything at once. I'm hearing at the moment quite a lot of pressure about you've got to do online, you've got to do mobile, you've got to do Facebook, you've got to do Twitter, you've got to do all these things. And it can be a bit overwhelming. And I suppose the lesson that I've learned in the last 5 years is you can still be bold and just do things well and do them sort of one thing at a time. You haven't got to do everything at once. And I suppose that's going to be my message. And I've certainly got the figures to prove it. We started off with the event raising just a few thousand dollars. Well, this year we raised $18.4 million in Australia, which is 81 cents per head of population, because we're not a big country. And I suppose if you were to translate that into the United States, you're talking about an event raising $242 million if you did it in the United States. That's what 81 cents per head is worth. So for us, it's big business. So I suppose we've got the runs on the board.
Yeah, and I think that's a significant message here on the Nonprofit Coach. That's very consistent with our message here, is that while social media is important and we're known for bringing the very best updated information on how nonprofits can succeed online, our message is not that all roads lead to social media. That's actually the integration of online and offline, that there needs to be a prioritization of what you're doing online that starts with a well-designed website. In fact, Facebook is pretty far down the list. Not inconsequential. It is growing, but it is not the number one strategy for success online. It sounds like you agree with that assessment.
Yeah, I mean, we use Facebook. We've only just started doing that very recently. I mean, our main aim when we first decided we wanted to go online was we saw the potential for online, not just of raising money, but also helping us to be more effective with very small resources. We don't have a big team of people, and we wanted to use technical online tools to help us be more effective without having to employ hundreds and thousands of people. So we use online to not only save resources but also to make money. But you're right, it's the website that's been the key, the absolute key. And really, we made the first step towards doing a website and refining that as we've gone. And it's really only very recently, like in the last year, that we decided to involve Facebook very much. And even so, we still use Facebook more as an advertising medium. It's part of our advertising strategy. We try and create buzz with Facebook. We try and get people excited and communicating with the campaign, but we're not using it as a direct appeal for funds at all. I mean, that's still to be proven to me, but certainly as a way of getting some excitement out there as part of our advertising strategy, it seems to have done a lot of work. But we're doing it in amongst online advertising. We do a lot of that now. And our advertising, we reached over 2 million people online with our online advertising last year. But that was using search engine marketing, YouTube, display ads on tablets and on mobile devices, so not just Facebook.
Well, I have to ask you a question because I do want to move on to specifically talking about the world's greatest shave, a huge event in Australia, and just sort of a little bit tongue-in-cheek here, but I'm just wondering if you can reflect on Australians' fascination with hair, because when I hear about the world's greatest shave coming from Australia, it also reminds me of another guest that we've had here on the Nonprofit Coach, and that's the folks from Movember. Also started in Australia, and I'm just wondering, you know, one event has you growing hair, the other has you shaving hair. Is this just a fascination that Australians have?
I don't think so. I think what works with them both, and it's a bit of a thing with me, that I think event fundraising works well when there is some sort of connection with the event and the fun you have with the actual cause. You know, the reason the world's greatest shave works is because people lose their hair when they get treated for blood cancer. So while there's a lot of fun and we raise most of our money by people saying, I would love to see you with no hair, and everyone having a good laugh at you for a short time, there is also the serious side of it that people do also empathize with you about what it's like to lose your hair when you're being treated for cancer. And I think in the same way, Movember works really well because it's for men's causes, and growing a moustache is something only a man can do. So,
right,
again,
right.
There's a great connection.
So it ties in very well. So is that, as you said, is for all the listeners today who are, you know, either, first of all, thinking, how can I just copy this? But I don't think that's your message, to just go out and copy what someone else is doing, but to find something clever that connects people to something that they might not otherwise be connected to.
Absolutely. I suppose one of the things we do in Australia well, and I don't know how well this works in North America, but you know, it's this idea of doing something that is fun for a serious cause, and that certainly taps into the Australian psyche. So it doesn't really matter what it is, but if you're doing something fun for something serious, you can have fun. It's easier to ask somebody to give you money for something that's fun. We promote our World's Greatest Shave event in a fun way, and then we engage them with what the money is being used for and the seriousness of the cause once we've got them hooked. And I think that works hand in glove with this idea that the event itself has to be, as you say, clever and have some connection so that you understand why you're doing it. I'm shaving my head because people lose their hair. I'm growing a moustache because it's about men's diseases. Another event that I really like is the Underwear Affair, you know, where you do this event wearing your underwear, and it's for cancers below the waist. You know, there's a direct connection, even in a fun way, with what the thing's about. So my tip would be, is if you were looking to create an event, make sure it has got some connection back to your story, and it's not just, let's do this because it sounds cool.
Yeah, exactly. So when did this start? When did you come up with the concept of the world's greatest shave?
Well, it got started by a lady in Australia who her best friend was diagnosed with a blood cancer, and she was particularly horrified by how long and arduous the treatment was going to be, and how her friend was going to be having chemotherapy for 8 months, and she was going to lose her hair. So she decided to shave her hair in sympathy with it. She said, "Well, if you're going to be bald, I'll be bald too, and then we can go through this journey together."
Right.
The following year, our local chapter of the charity decided to sort of promote that a bit more widely locally, and then it's grown from there. So basically, 1998 we started from the ground up. We've now got over 150,000 people doing it, and it just keeps on growing, which amazes me in some respects, because one of the big issues we have with the shave is that people don't tend to do it more than once. So this makes it even more remarkable. People don't come back and shave their head year on year on year. We have some people that maybe will come back a couple of years later, but really, we don't have a lot of longevity with our people. So it's always new people who are seeing this and saying, I'm going to do that next year. So we just promote it, and it's now just people now just know the event. It's a real signature event in Australia, and it's just really well known and tends to almost promote itself. Word of mouth is very important.
That's been quite a challenge to not be able to go back necessarily and have the success of having people come back year after year. You almost have to create a new team each year. But do donors seek out people who are willing to shave their head for this event? So are donors consistent, even if those who are actually being shaved are not?
One of the big leaps we made was when we started encouraging the concept of people doing this in teams. That was when we went online, and we had the option to promote the idea of people getting together as a team. That really helped the event to grow, because people who traditionally had come on individually to say, I'm going to shave my head, now could encourage other people to join them. And the secondary option in our event is to color your hair instead. If you're not brave enough to shave, then just color your hair for the day.
Okay, so you have the option sort of doing it a different way.
But what I'm getting at is that
you were just starting to move towards Facebook. Obviously, that has not been up to now the biggest way that you've grown this event. What has been the most successful way for you to promote this?
TV advertising.
Okay. Now, do you have funds for that, or are the folks in Australia just particularly generous about your event?
We made a big decision a few years ago to actually put some money into an advertising spend, working on the assumption that if we went to a TV station and said we had some money, then we would also still play the charity card and say, look, we want a great deal more than this, but we have got some money. So we weren't just going there with our begging bowl. We were going there as a client and saying, this is what we've got, but we want three times that in airtime. We found that it's worked really well going to just one station and getting them on board as a sort of partner in the whole thing.
More about that, because that's a significant move for you. It's an expensive move for you. It sounds like it paid off. Is that advice that you would give to our listeners to consider?
Definitely. I'm not sure how this model would vary in the United States, but certainly we found that if you're just trying to rely on getting free space in the press, free space on TV with community service announcements, as we call them, you know, you really are just getting a few spots in the middle of the day or a couple of spots at midnight after the late night movie or the sports finished, and that's just not going to deliver you the audience. What we found was that by going to we actually went to a media buyer and said, look, we've got $1 million and we want to spend this with a TV station, but we want $4 million worth of airtime. And so they went out on our behalf and got a TV channel to work with us. They then engage with it. They make some other promotions as part of their own programs. We get stuff in programs, like on their breakfast show and so on and so forth, so that it really does become across their network that they are supporting us and we're supporting them. But they'll do that because we went in with some money and we were a client to be taken seriously, not just another charity in the queue wanting something for nothing.
Well, I think that's significant. It's a good piece of advice to consider. How are you investing in your own event if you want others to make that similar kind of an investment? And I know that our listeners are always looking for some sort of metric that they can measure against. Would you say that it's a fair metric, this $1 for four? You invest one, and it's reasonable to expect that within the marketplace there's a donation of $4?
Yeah. I mean, that's certainly what we ask for from a TV station. And, in fact, what we've ended up with all the added PR and all the added exposure, is a value of more like $12 million in terms of what we got from the TV station once they got on board with it. But certainly three times the amount is typical. We found that just going to one station and saying, look, we're just going to spend with you, you're the exclusive guys, made them more generous. A few years ago, we used to go and spend, you know, there's three main commercial channels in Australia. We went to all three with a third of the money, and they all kind of gave us double what we asked for. But we found that by going to one station saying, you're our exclusive channel, they kind of got more generous, and they certainly liked the idea that they could own it and, you know, and take some credit for its success themselves. They like to be associated with a successful campaign.
Exactly. We are live here with Dave Sims, General Manager of Events Community Relations at the Leukemia Foundation of Australia. He's a speaker up in Toronto this week at the ARTES Interactive Conference. Dave, we're going to take a little bit of a break, and when we come back, I would like you to settle in on the advice that you might have related to the use of social media and mobile that is growing. We'll be right back after this break. Go ahead and grab a pencil. I just want to share with you the programming notes here for the Nonprofit Coach. Coming up next week here on the Nonprofit Coach, that's Tuesday, October 23rd, 12 noon Eastern, as always, we will have David LaGreca. David LaGreca is an expert in boards of directors and governance matters, and he will be speaking with us here on the Nonprofit Coach. We're going to wind up October with Amy Eisenstein, who is a major gift campaign expert. We are then going to take a little bit of a break here in the United States. It probably has not gone without notice that we have a presidential campaign coming up, so we want everybody to get out and to support your favorite candidate and to make sure that you vote on November 6th. So that is the day we will not be live here on the Nonprofit Coach, because I want to make sure I've got time to support my favorite candidate. So that's a great day to catch up on all the wonderful podcasts, including the top 10 shows that we have unveiled here on the Nonprofit Coach. We're going to come back on November 13th with the big international giving show. This is going to be a very significant show on how you can leverage international donors and how American donors can give internationally. Next up in November, we will be here with Robert Penna. Robert Penna has the Outcomes Toolbox, and he's going to help you understand and measure success for your nonprofit organization. Rounding out November, we will be here with our big National Philanthropy Day show. That's going to be November 27th. We have the winners, the youth winners of the AFP's International Award. So this is show is going to be about our youth and the future of philanthropy. Two terrific young philanthropists will be here on that show. In December, we're going to start off with Steve Hafner. This is always a very, very popular show, and this is about matching gifts, how you can get corporate donations to match the money that you are already raising. We will not have a show on December 11th, so you'll be able to take that day off again for catching up on your podcast that you may have missed. And then we round out the year, our big holiday show, as always, December 18th. We always wrap up our year with our very good friend Kay Sprinkle Grace. Kay Sprinkle Grace is all about making your year strategic and successful. So this is going to be tips on making 2013 successful. And Kay is always in the top 10 of our shows every single year. I don't know how she does it. She is quite consistent in being the top 10 show. So that rounds out 2012. You can see we've got some big shows and a big variety of experts here on the Nonprofit Coach. We're going to head back over to page two.
Remember, our podcasts and archives are always available 24 hours a day at tedhart.com. Click on Radio Links. If you're listening live today, the phone lines are open. Call in and ask a question by dialing 347-324-3080. Now, back to the Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart.
Hi, we're back here live on the Nonprofit Coach. We are here with Dave Sims, General Manager of Events Community Relations at the Leukemia Foundation in Australia. We do have some questions coming in, but I'm going to start off with asking you to reflect on where you're going with this event vis-a-vis social media and mobile.
Well, mobile is not something that we've done a huge amount with yet. As I said before, we take a relatively cautious approach and just try and tackle things one thing at a time and do them well. And we've been learning a lot about what does and doesn't work on the website and what does and doesn't work with our sign-up process and how people are using their profile pages to promote their fundraising to their potential sponsors. And we also believe a lot in advertising and promotion and creating buzz. So I think in terms of social media, we definitely see that as advertising as well as fundraising. But I think for us at the moment, social media is very much a way for someone who's participating in the event to ask people to sponsor them. So people are asking people face-to-face, they're asking people via email, they're also asking people in their Facebook posts, and that's where some of our money is coming from. Facebook's also a very big source of referrals to our website, so we're seeing it as a way of drawing people to our website. But it's not a space where we're going out there as a charity telling our story and saying, please donate. We're not using it as a direct place to
get donations. It's a way that your donors are connecting with each other, where they're inspiring each other. But for you, those roads lead back to your website.
Yeah, we're not asking for cash out on Facebook. And in terms of mobile, we've had an app as part of using the Artes product. There is an app that goes with the event. And again, that is very much for people who've already signed up to participate, a way for them to track their progress and a way for them to ask people for donations on Twitter and on Facebook and via email, or even just handing their smartphone over to someone sitting next to them in the pub and say, here you go, sponsor me. So often when you're trying to do an event where you want people to sponsor you, they say, oh, I must sponsor you. I must give you some money, you know. And you go, well, here you go. Here's my phone. Press that big green button. Donate to me now. So I like that. I suppose I'm still very much a believer that fundraising is still about people asking other people for money, and it's still very much a personal experience. And in a way, although we're using online and websites to make the whole thing resource-friendly and effective and simple, we still have a lot of personal contact with people. We still believe in having people on the phone calling you back to talk to you or sending you personalized messages. So we still keep the thing human. It mustn't become impersonal by using technology.
Well, I think that's a very important point that you bring up, is you're saying – technology is not an excuse for making things impersonal. It should give you the opportunity to make it more personal, more directed towards you.
Yeah. Well, when we email people, we have a whole email sequence that we send to people during the event, from sign up to the event and beyond. And all of those emails now, we're using an email program where we can segment based on criteria about each person, and we can send them different elements of content in that email based on who they are, so that it makes it more personal. You've got to use that information to make it feel more personal, not more impersonal. I certainly hate that thing where you ring up somebody, you ring up the electricity company and it's press one for this, press two for that, press three for the other. I hate that. I certainly don't want technology that makes it impersonal. I think we should be using it, using all that data we collect, making sure we're only collecting data we need, and then when we've got it, make sure we use it. So if you're communicating with someone who's at school versus someone who is part of a team that wants to raise $10,000 at a major mining company, the content of those emails, the content of those phone calls has got to have a different tone and style, and maybe even different fundraising tips and suggestions, because it's a very different audience.
Yeah, and I think that is significant. Now, I do want to jump over to one question. Barbara, thank you for emailing in. Barbara is just wondering if you find in Australia that there are pockets of support, or is this a national event?
Oh, it's completely national. People do it all over the country, and people from all walks of life do this. We have school kids who donate their pocket money. We have kids doing it as a Friday fun day on the Friday of the event. A lot of individuals, half the money still comes from an individual who typically raises about $600. So it's actually quite a high dollar per person event, because it's seen as quite a sacrifice to shave your hair off. So people are very generous. I think compared to a sponsored walk, for example, $600 is quite a high dollar per head. But you'll also get people, you know, in corporate teams, big businesses will all get together and do it as a big team event. Typically, as I was saying before, with teams, you'll get maybe one or two people shaving, and they're the focus of the fun. Everyone else supports by coloring, and they raise slightly less money. But as a team, they raise a great deal. So it certainly does cover all different segments, and we make sure we tailor our messages to those different groups of people.
Now, you obviously have a huge event here, and it's grown over time. So this is not something that happens overnight. What advice specifically would you have for the smaller nonprofits that are listening today who are trying to take what has happened for your organization, and you've been very successful in doing that, but they have limited time, limited audience, limited resources. What do they take away from your event?
I think being clear about what it is you do want to do, having a good reason why you want to do it, and maybe actually being bold enough to invest in a serious strategy of one particular thing that you want to do. So, for example, we made the decision that we would take this event and focus on the fun aspect of it. And we weren't shy about that. You know, a lot of people might have thought, you know, it's a charity. People have got a very serious diseases. A lot of people are dying from this. How can you do this as a fun thing? But we decided, look, this is a fun thing. We learned from the ground up that that people did this for fun as well as for serious reasons. So we sort of tapped into that. So I suppose we were listening to what people were already doing and just building on it. But that big decision to advertise, the big decision to go online, I mean, we made the decision to focus on web back in 2006 was when we started, which was quite new then, I suppose. But it was to answer a specific problem we had, which was a cash flow problem. Because this event, people would fundraise and then we got the money afterwards. We were actually in a bit of trouble just before the event happened because all our money came in afterwards. So we thought, well, how can we get some money to come in sooner? And we thought, well, if we did online, people would donate ahead of time rather than give you the money and then take it to the bank after you've shaved your head. So we then made a business case and went to our board and said, look, this is what we want to do. It's going to cost us this money. It's going to cost us these resources, but here are the results that we want to have. And I think the other thing we've done is we've always tested everything we've done on a smaller thing that doesn't matter so much. So once we'd got a big thing that was precious to us, which this event is, before we tried anything too bold, we would always, on one of our smaller campaigns or our smaller events, we would test the idea first, learn what worked, learn what didn't work. And I suppose the other thing we would do is not do everything at once, you know, not dive in and say we've got to do it all and end up not doing it well. We thought it was better to do one or two things really well than try and do everything. So that would be something I would learn, whatever the size of your business.
Well, one of the things I wanted to explore with you is how this affects your other events. I mean, a lot of organizations I find sort of get, you know, inundated with event after event after event, and they're going back to the same well. And there's only so many things that people can support. And sometimes I think that actually takes away from more significant major gift support and traditional fundraising beyond special events. Do you find that's the case?
That is an issue that we've got. I mean, we were very lucky. We're a very young charity. We only started in the late 90s in many of the states of Australia. And so we kind of inherited this fabulous goose laying this golden egg for us. So while we focused on that, you're right, it's almost been at the expense of more traditional donors giving us money at the key times of the year. And that's something that we're now trying to build up to diversify. But, of course, we see these major events as acquisition programs. That the whole idea of these is to entice people into our organization through the fun avenue, and then once we've got them, we can then talk to them about supporting us in other ways. So what we're trying to get more sophisticated at is learning how to migrate people from this to other forms of giving or other forms of supporting. It's something we're not doing a splendid job of yet, but it's where we've identified we really want to work better at converting our donors. I suppose one of the problems you can have with fundraising where it's a sponsored event is that often the donors will have a relationship with the participant. You know, if I'm shaving my head, you sponsor me because you want to support me. That's a step away from I support the Leukemia Foundation, I want to give directly to the Leukemia Foundation. So we're trying to tell stories now with the donors far more by email and by phone calls of saying, by sponsoring Dave, you did this great thing, here's a chance for you to do that again. Like, Dave doesn't need to shave his head again for you to support us again. So we have to move it from that indirect connection to a direct connection, and that's something that we're trying to get better at.
And I think that's a common concern or issue that a lot of organizations face. Where are you going for that solution? Or do you think that is a decision that charities overall have to make, and that is that there is not a possibility for most organizations to devote the kind of resources it takes to be successful in major gifts and special events all at the same time?
Yeah, well, it's a problem that we have. We're trying to make sure that we tell a better story of how we've spent your money when you sponsor someone. So in all of our messaging, all of our emails, we're then following that up with letters talking about how we've used the money that you gave to sponsor somebody so that we can then continue to tell that story and then have additional asks for funds later on outside of the event. So we're doing it with better written emails. We're making sure there's lots of more content on our website about how we've spent the money. We decided we needed to tell people that a lot sooner than we have been. So straight away, as soon as you sponsor me, you're getting an email saying, thanks for sponsoring Dave. This is what we're already going to be doing with the money. This is helping families like Kathy's, and we're telling a really human story right from the word go, and we're not being scared to follow up a bit more with the donors, with the sponsors.
What sort of success are you having with that message? Are you seeing signs that you are bridging those folks from being special event donors to a specific person for a specific reason to becoming general supporters of your organization?
We are getting some success, yes. It's still very early days, and we're not doing a full measurement of it. We've only really started doing this in a considered and organized way in the last 12 months, so now is about the time where I want to start looking at it. But we're certainly getting some. I've been quite surprised at how people who are responsive to that conversion actually go right into being monthly regular givers rather than just doing a one-off gift. They're kind of, if they're going to respond at all, they're kind of going, yeah, well, I'll do it, and I'll do $10 a month. That's fine. And they become a regular monthly donor. So we're quite pleased with that sort of response.
And what about evaluating the likelihood? In other words, finding among those $10, $25 donors, those who might have more significant wealth to jump into your campaign?
Well, that's something that we are doing more work in, perhaps more with traditional direct mail. We're trying to segment these donors into the amount of gift that they gave as a sponsorship, and then we're trying to do slightly different messages based on the amount of money they've given. I think, to be honest, Ted, it's early days for me to say how well we're achieving that, but I suppose typically in our events, you know, there aren't people who are giving huge dollars. There are some. We get a few people giving in the hundreds. We've got corporates who are giving dollar matching. That's a significant thing that we're trying to tap into more, you know, where the staff put a team in, and for whatever the staff raise, the company agrees to match what the staff raise. We're certainly using those leads as a way of going to those businesses to try and talk about broader support, event sponsorship, and other ongoing donations.
Okay,
but, you know, in terms of,
do you find success in the corporate realm more than the individual?
Well, we're getting a bit in both. I mean, the corporate is there in theory, and they're keen and eager to talk to us, but Obviously, economically at the moment, it's quite difficult for a lot of corporates to do a lot more. They quite like dollar matching what the staff raise because in the current economic climate, it's a safe way to continue to show philanthropic support with the backing of the staff. I think we're finding in Australia at the moment that trying to go to corporates for sponsorship or major donations is proving difficult because in the current economic climate, if times are bad or they're having to lay people off or make redundancies or cut back the workforce, they don't want to be seen to be spending money on anything that is non-essential. So giving a straight donation or a corporate sponsorship is proving very tricky for us in Australia at the moment. But supporting what the staff already endorse is kind of a safe way, a way you're not going to get criticized for doing some support.
Very good point. As we're sadly getting to the end of the show here, I want to make sure that you have opportunity to share with our speakers in some specificity the tools that you have found to be most successful over time. Have they changed, or is it the sort of the traditional approach that you had from the beginning, plus the TV advertising that you've already spoken about? Has really been, in your estimation, the key to success?
Yeah. I think some of our keys to success have been that we haven't just expected online to do the whole job for us. We've grown from getting about 20% of our money online to now about 55% of our money online. But that still means that 45% of our money was some $8 million, is still coming in by people being mailed a kit, asking people for cash, taking that to the bank, and that being banked the traditional way. So I certainly would say don't let go of all your offline strategies as well, because the two need to work side by side. I think the other thing that's worked for us is using data that we collect to make sure that we then service people correctly and that we're doing that communication that is tailored. So we only ask for stuff we need to know. We've tried to cut back the process as much as we can. People are always telling us that they want our sign up and donate process to be really short and really simple and really quick. So we've actually taken stuff out of our website processes that we used to have in there to just try and really reduce the number of questions we ask up front. Then once we get that information, we make sure we use it. So we make phone calls, we pay visits to people, we send them different kits based on what they've told us. So I think that has really made a huge difference. And we've kept it personal. We still make sure that we talk to people and that we don't just become this sort of automated online experience. It's still got to be personal.
So listening to your donors, understanding your donors is a key to being able to grow the base for support.
Absolutely. Absolutely knowing what they want.
So what comes next? What happens next for this event and for your organization?
Well, I think one thing we are getting some people who are very web savvy who are saying that they don't want to be getting a kit in the mail and they don't want to be getting traditional stuff. So for us, for the first time next year, we're going to actually offer people the chance to opt out of getting a fundraising kit in the mail. I'm very nervous about this because I still think getting a physical thing still makes the thing real for people. It just worries me about the whole thing being an online thing. But we're thinking of offering that as an opt-out thing to people and giving them a more comprehensive mobile app so that they are kind of getting all the kits that we want them to get, but in an online way. And I think web-savvy people will have that, but we'll still have the traditional stuff for the traditional people. So that's one direction we're going in with. And up to now, we also haven't done a mobile-optimized version of our website. We haven't had the resources or the budget to do that. So if you look at our website on a mobile device, it's just the same website. So I think we are going to optimize the website. We're not going to do a separate website for it. We're going to make sure we design our current website in a way that looks okay on a mobile phone. I don't want to have two separate websites to maintain.
It's a big branding issue. Just looking at the last minute or so here on the show, how can our listeners today, if they wanted to reach out to you? Now, we have provided a link to the Leukemia Group in Australia and the Big Shave website. How can they reach out to you?
They can reach out to me at my email address, which is dsims at leukemia.org.au, or just go to that World's Greatest Shave website. There's a contact form on there, and send a message through there, and that will get to me too.
And that will get to you as well. We do have a link to the World's Greatest Shave over at tedhart.com. It's my pleasure to thank Dave Sims for being our guest here on The Nonprofit Coach.
Thanks, Ted.
And don't forget, next week we will be right here live on The Nonprofit Coach, October 23rd, 12 noon Eastern, with David LaGreca, a national expert in board and governance matters. That is The Nonprofit Coach for today. We will catch you next week.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Coach Radio Show with Ted Hart. Tell all your friends to check out our production schedule and download our iPod and iPad-friendly podcasts at tedhart.com. Thanks for listening to The Nonprofit Coach.